Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 96 of the IoT for All podcast. I'm your host, Ryan Chacon, and today's guest is Matt Hatton of Transforma Insights, who joins us today to talk about the IoT landscape of 2020 and 2021. He also shares with us some forecasts for the IoT space for early next year, including the role of hyperscalers on the landscape and some of the biggest challenges coming from companies looking to start their IoT journeys. As the founding partner of Transforma Insights, Matt is a respected commentator and technology industry expert with more than 20 years experience at the cutting edge of technology research and consulting. He is a thought leader in digital transformation and the Internet of Things. Matt also has a weekly podcast called The Wireless Noodle, which is a guide to the impact of disruptive technologies on business. And in 2020, Matt co-wrote a book called The Internet of Things Myth. And for those of you who may be unfamiliar with Transforma Insights, they are a research firm focused on the world of IoT, AI, and digital transformation. Led by seasoned technology industry analysts, they provide advice, recommendations, and decision support tools for organizations seeking to understand how new technologies will change the market in which they operate. So needless to say, Matt has a ton of experience in this space, and a lot of the topics we talk about today fall very much in line with looking forward into 2021. So I think the insights he shares are fantastic, and I hope you all get a lot of value out of it. So without further ado, please enjoy this episode with Matt Hatton of Informa Insights. Welcome, Matt, to the IoT for All show. Thanks for joining me here today.
My pleasure being here.
Yeah, it's great to have you. You want to start off by just giving a quick introduction about yourself, talking a little bit about your background experience, and you know, a little bit more about you for our audience's sake?
Yeah, absolutely. My heritage is a telecoms guy, really. I've been mostly as a technology industry analyst, a little bit of time working as at a mobile operator, but mostly as an analyst. And in the last, 15 years, pretty much entirely focused on IoT, actually.
Okay.
So that's my background. But most interestingly, I guess, I founded a company called Makena Research back in 2011, which I sold to Gartner in 2016. So we managed to establish that as a pretty strong IoT analyst firm. I'm now back with the new firm, Transforma Insights, which kicked off in November.
So tell me a little bit more about Transforma. What do you all do? Is it kind of different from the firm you started and then sold to Gartner, or is it kind of a different approach?
Similar sort of a shtick. The focus area is kind of IoT plus. The interesting thing was back in the day, towards the latter days of Makena Research, we tended to find ourselves having conversations with people about the intersection of IoT with a bunch of other technologies, things like data exchange or AI or blockchain. And we figured, you know what? It's pretty much the same people who are interested in these topics. And they've got questions about how all of these things interact with each other. And we figured, you know what, to really deliver value, we actually have to be looking at all of these across the board. So when we were sitting down working out what we wanted to do with Transforma Insights, we figured actually we need to be looking at a broader range of disruptive technologies. I mean, IoT is home, right? IoT is where we come from. That's where we've always earned our crust. But I think it's increasingly important to understand all of these other technologies, the AIs and the distributed ledgers and the edge computings and all these other various different areas. So that's one variation, slightly different focus on coverage areas. In terms of everything else, it's broadly the same. We're doing some very, very detailed market forecasts. Our IoT ones are just out as of a few weeks ago or the latest, greatest additional levels of granularity are out as of earlier in September. And we're publishing also a whole load of reports looking at best practice. I mean, technical and commercial best practice is effectively what we do on the qualitative side of things. And a little bit more aimed at the enterprise user rather than the vendor community. But I mean, effectively, we cover both.
So how do most people engage with your company? Is it on kind of the services side from a consulting standpoint, or is it more from a the content and the reporting and the analysis that you do and kind of paying for insights on that side?
Mostly it's on a subscription basis. Yeah. We tend to, I'll say prefer that model. It's a right once and sell to multiple people type of a model. And I think in terms of scalability, it makes rather more sense than the consulting piece. Now, we do the consulting piece. You know, there's things around white papers and webinars and that sort of marketing end of the spectrum, and also a strategic consultant around, okay, we'll run the rule over my company's strategy type thing as well. So there is an element of that, but I think the greatest value tends to be delivered on the multi-client, because anybody who's a subscriber there gets access to all this wide range of content that we put together, and it's more cost-effective way of doing it, I think.
That makes sense. Okay. And is there a certain type of company or stage the company is in that you kind of focus your efforts on, or is it kind of spread across the board?
It's quite a mix. Really, there's two main groups of clients. So one is the vendors, technology vendors, and that technology vendors, large and small. The big guys tend to want to know, you know, how do they match up against their competitors, or how are the market dynamics working out, these types of things. And the smaller companies are often looking to understand, well, you know, how do we get a foothold in this space? How do we start competing with the big boys? What are we doing there? So we've worked with a massive array of different size and shapes of vendors in the IoT space. In terms of the adopters, it tends to be at the bigger sort of Fortune 500 end of the spectrum. People are in the sort of chief digital operator, digital officer, or certainly within an innovation business unit, say that sort of thing. I mean, there's no consistency with job titles, as you can probably imagine, it's that sort of role, because those are the organizations that have time to sit and think about, okay, well, what do we want to do about some of these disruptive technologies, or even doing the horizon scanning for which of the disruptive technologies that we need to be worried about, because we're an established organization. And SMB tends not to have either the bandwidth or necessarily the concerns about it, because maybe they should, but it tends not to be where we hit.
Gotcha. Okay. So now if we talk a little bit more about kind of the work you've all done and your kind of overview of the market, I'd love to get a sense of how you just view the general IoT market opportunity. So I understand you've done recent research that includes a lot of forecasting around that. So how would you just kind of, to our audience, explain your all's view of the market opportunity that lies within IoT?
I think it's safe to say it's a big opportunity. If you want numbers, we're talking 25 billion connected devices, over a trillion dollars in revenue by 2030. Thing with IoT though is it's not a market. It's not one market, certainly. It's lots of different fragmented markets that happen to use a set of technologies that look somewhat alike, right? And anybody addressing the space has to have that realization and address it in a rather more piecemeal approach than this idea of a sort of umbrella of IoT might suggest. Same thing applies with, we talk a lot about digital transformation, or the industry talks a lot about digital transformation. That's another sort of semi-nonsense term, because it incorporates a whole load of different disruptive technologies, all of which are doing different things for different people. But it's kind of useful for us to think about it in that way and talk about it in that way. But in terms of how the market's developing, yeah, a lot of opportunity. What we've got at the moment is... you saw probably in the first, just go back maybe 10 years, right? 2010 to 2015, that kind of a period, lots of technology innovation. Suddenly the concept of IoT, or the opportunity of IoT, came onto a lot of companies' radars. Now, we had industrial monitoring systems and telematics and so on for decades before that. But it was kind of that decade where there was a lot of interest and a lot of new technologies. We got the platformization of the space, and there were lots of new access technologies came around and so on. And then in the latter half of the 2010s, things went a bit quiet. It was a bit of a struggle to deliver, or more of the focus was on delivery. I sometimes refer to it as the first IoT winter. The AI, they talk about winters in AI a lot, where it takes a while for the market or the just the ecosystem to catch up with the technology developments that have come before. And I think that's probably a reasonable way of thinking about it. We got all these great technologies, and then it takes a little while for the businesses who are implementing it to actually get to grips with it. So things went a little bit quiet. Necessarily so. No, it's not a criticism, but things did go a little quieter. And now they're starting to really ramp up again. We've got some really interesting stuff coming through. All the low power wide area technologies are really coming on stream. The hyperconnectivity, the hyperscalers are really starting to get interest in the space. So there's a lot of interesting stuff happening.
So how do you see hyperscalers kind of having an impact on IoT?
I would say if there's one thing that defines what's going to happen with IoT in the next 5 to 10 years, it's the impact of AWS and Microsoft. Sure. And I've kind of described it as they almost have to decide how far into this they want to go, how deep into it they want to get. For them, they effectively own the cloud space, and with everything moving out of the cloud and towards the edge with more automation and AI and so on, it's much more incumbent on them to push into that space, which puts them more into the firing line of actually owning more of IoT and being responsible for supporting a lot more of it. So I feel like that's more or less where the action's at, and how they seek to catalyze it.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. One of the other things you mentioned in your statement a second ago was around the kind of the value that LPWAN technologies are playing in the growth of IoT. So I wanted to kind of chat a little bit about that for a second and talk about just the general landscape on the connectivity side. So, we have these LPWAN technologies, we have 5G, we have, private networks, we have just, a wide variety of different connectivity technologies that are in the market today. How do you kind of just generally describe that overall connectivity landscape and the implications it has for IoT? Because we talk a lot about connectivity here, and we're big believers in what LPWAN technologies are going to enable, not just in the use cases, but oftentimes the connectivity is inexpensive, which, if you tie that with cheaper devices, then that allows larger deployments and larger adoption and more connected devices out in the field, which just overall boosts up IoT as an industry. So how do you, or I guess I'd love to get your thoughts on kind of how the connectivity landscape is shaping out and kind of what you see happening over the next couple of years and just the general implications those different technologies or new technologies are going to have on the industry.
Yeah, I think if I had to pick one word, it's patchwork. Okay. I think about it in terms of if we went back to 2010 again. 2010, you stick a SIM card in something that's probably got a 2G modem in it. You send it out anywhere in the world and it works. Now, limited capability, limited functionality, and it's probably pretty expensive, but it would work. What we've got now is much more of a, as I said, patchwork of different technologies being available. Mm-hmm. You've got 2G and 3G switch off, which has already happened. You've got 5G coming in at different rates. You've got the new, what we would now term MMTC technologies, LTE-M and narrowband IoT coming in with very varying approaches and strategies for rollout. Mm-hmm. Some companies deciding not even to deploy MBIoT and going for LoRa. You have all sorts of strategic decisions on this, which means that for the first time in probably 20, 25 years, we're reaching for our coverage maps, and we're talking about roaming agreements. And this is slightly frustrating, if I'm perfectly honest, but I guess it's a stage that has to be got through in order to deliver the additional functionality. This is not being done for no reason. This is being done the trade-off is that you get a whole lot more additional functionality and capability. It's going to be much better connecting these devices using narrowband IoT than it is connecting 2G eventually. But you've still got to get through that phase of network deployment, network optimization, and all of these various things that we sort of took for granted with the legacy technologies. So I see it as a lot more tools, a lot more useful tools, but yeah, it's a challenging environment. And there's a lot of complexity for anybody who's having to make those decisions about which technologies to adopt at the moment. So a big gap in the market for anyone who can remove that complexity.
Yeah, I think that's a good statement just across the board in IoT, right? Like the complexities associated with IoT solutions, because there's so many different components to make a solution successful, and the knowledge and expertise you need to have to handle and make decisions around each component individually to put them together is not always something that each firm or company has, which is often a reason why companies are hesitant to get involved in the IoT spaces. You know, they think they have to understand hardware, they have to understand connectivity, they understand the cloud, they have to understand, you know, the what happens to the data and how it gets displayed on to the end user. So it's a lot of different moving pieces. So, you know, as the connectivity, I think, you know, more options, I think, is a good thing, like you said, but I think finding people who really understand and can match the connectivity with the use case is going to be vitally important, not just to save on costs, but also to have deployments be successful.
Yeah, I think so. But the good news is things are getting, generally speaking, things are getting better. This scenario with the connectivity landscape is a short-term thing. We've got almost a perfect storm of dumping of 2G and 3G networks, arrival of 5G, other low power technologies, the growth of private networks, you know, all of this stuff suddenly happening all at one time. But that's not the general trend. The general trend is towards more easy to use tools. The platform, the arrival of all of these various IoT platforms in the early 2010s was a perfect example. You know, prior to that, there was an awful lot of custom build, and it can only be good news for most organizations that these tools that help to simplify the process and make significantly cheaper the process of deploying all these things. You know, anyone can hire Accenture to go build them an IoT app of their choice. There will always be a solution to driving out this complexity, but fortunately, I think that's getting a little closer to the end user in terms of the actual products.
How do you view the hardware landscape too, as it connect, you know, as it relates to the connectivity side? Usually when we talk to companies, it seems like the hardware is usually the most difficult part, not just from a cost perspective and finding hardware that fits in to ensure that they have the ROI they're looking for, but also just from the maturity of the technology. As you kind of mentioned, a lot of these solutions have been built kind of from scratch and are custom, but you know, obviously there are a lot of kind of turnkey devices out there. How do you kind of see the current hardware landscape and kind of the evolution of it going forward in order to kind of help contribute or help IoT, you know, reach a more mature level and really grow adoption?
I don't think I've got much of an answer for you, to be perfectly honest. I don't see just cards on the table. I don't think the hardware landscape has changed that much in the last few years. And so I would say there's not a lot to be said on it, if I'm perfectly honest. It's obviously the technologies change and they update and they add in new capabilities as they go. But in terms of anything that's really moved the goalposts, I haven't seen really an awful lot in the last few years, not compared to how, you know, the connectivity providers have really changed their approach, or the ERP CRM vendors, for instance, have. You know, a lot of people have adapted what they do to more readily address the IoT opportunity, but the hardware space, not so much, in my opinion.
Sure. And so I guess one question I kind of have sort of relates is, you know, hardware we've seen as a challenge for a lot of companies, but in your experience working with a variety of different organizations of all shapes and sizes, where have you seen the biggest challenges lie for those organizations in either the early planning stages on their IoT journey, or, you know, if you engage with a company and they've already, attempted to go down the IoT path, or maybe haven't been successful? Are there any kind of common areas you're seeing a lot of companies hit roadblocks in?
Yeah, and it's all internal, really.
Okay.
A lot of it's to do with not thinking through. No, that's unfair. A lot of it's to do with having a technological roadmap, but not a commercial roadmap for success, right? So these things tend to get run by the IT department, and the IT department thinks about the technology, but doesn't really give that much thought to what will they do if this proof of concept works out? You know, what are they are they going to do in terms of the how you adapt the internal processes within the organization, or the how the finance department might be affected, or the other human resources, or the company culture, and these various other things that are internal are much more the sticking point than technology, really. And I think that's probably nothing new and nothing too surprising. You know, if I had a dollar for every time somebody had said the big challenge is not the technology, it's the commercial issues, well, you know, I'd have several dollars.
Yeah,
but,
right.
You know, it's a pretty common thing to be said, but it does equally apply here. And we see that as frequently the stumbling block, you know, not having these two paths which are overlapping and sort of sparking off each other to allow for success. And I mean, there's a whole host of other ones. We ran a webinar which looked at some strategies for success for implementation of IoT based on some real world examples that we've seen, and there was a whole bunch of interesting examples there. I mean, I've summarized a little bit, but if anybody's interested, I check that out. That's on
okay. Great. So I wanted to kind of then go from the challenges side of what you've seen to more of the kind of advice, best practices, like that kind of thing. So I assume obviously you not just analyzed, but also been involved in hundreds of real world, you know, IoT deployments in some connection or another. And what have you kind of learned from that experience from that you would be willing to share with our audience on kind of best practices and kind of advice for getting started, or if you've already started, things you should be thinking about and make sure you're really devoting your time to in order to ensure the best chance of success?
Yeah, I think one piece of advice would be learn from what other people have done.
Okay.
That's a pretty obvious one, I would say, but it's not often one that people take on board. You know, running numerous proofs of concept just to test the waters for something that you may not actually want to ever do, it wastes a lot of time. And there are numerous examples of pretty much every company deploying any kind of, or every type of company deploying any type of IoT that you might choose to mention. So there's certainly that as a recommendation. I think we've got I come back to this idea of making sure you've put in place the both the commercial and the technical teams in order to work through your requirements. It's very useful to have involvement from somebody senior, somebody within the C-level, some a C-level executive would be ideal. And it's typically best if it's not IT who's in charge of this stuff, because fundamentally IoT is not an IT problem. IoT is a business process problem, or it's a new product issue, or it's about having streamlining some kind of process within the organization for cost savings or whatever, which puts it in the realm of the product manager or chief product officer or CTO or even CFO. And those tend to be better people to drive these kinds of initiatives than CIO or the IT department more broadly.
Yeah. And that makes a lot of sense. How have you seen kind of the education or the availability of kind of, you know, knowledge share of impact how the internal teams have been able to, I guess, better understand IoT to make the process easier and I guess be less risk adverse to going to go down the IoT path? Because one of the things we've seen in the past, before we started IoT for All, was the most content out there was very, you know, dense. It was very engineer to engineer focused. It was very technical, kind of like you alluded to earlier, is a lot of the thought process is very technical. It's not really around necessarily the business case. It's not necessarily around the intended end user and kind of thinking from that standpoint backwards. It's all focused around technology. Yeah. So when we started IoT for All, our big focus was, let's write content that anyone can understand. So the people out there that are not in IoT, but maybe want that IoT could help their business, but they're not technical, could understand the value of IoT, mm-hmm. how it applies to their business, and then what they can do to start adopting it, that just generally help the market and, you know, the IoT space in general just kind of grow. But how have you seen just the general availability of that expertise and knowledge, and then and the impact it's had on organizations that you speak to? Like, are you coming into conversations with customers and they're pretty well informed and understanding of what IoT is, the technologies around IoT, what they can do, and or are they kind of coming into it like really kind of clueless and leaning on you all to really guide them down that path?
Oh, it's a wide mix, but I think there is what you flag up is one of the big challenges, which is the technologists, the vendor community predominantly, mm-hmm. talking the language of the potential user, right? Now, I'm probably immune to it, right? Because when I sit in a room and have a conversation with a technology vendor, I probably want them to talk to me about technology and in as broad a sense as we possibly can. But I had a really interesting conversation with a company called Stream Analyze the other week. I've got no connection with them other than that it was a very interesting conversation. And they do data flow management effectively. And they, one of their slides was, if you're a product manager, uh-huh. this is how it affects your product, right? And putting it in those kinds of terms, okay, thinking about what the role of the person right. is that they're talking to, and couching what their product does in the context of what that person does is it seems like a no-brainer, but a lot of companies don't do it. And I think thinking very carefully about what the audience is a critical thing.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I want to transition just kind of as we're wrapping up here and ask you a question kind of about that's really relevant to the times right now and see from your angle, because a lot of the guests I've had on the podcast have a very, you know, like basically the question is, how's COVID affecting things? And they have a viewpoint from their own organization. But I think you guys have, you know, access to a wide variety of industries, a wide variety of company types. So I'm kind of curious to hear your take on how you've seen COVID affect things in the IoT space across industries rather than just focus on one, and kind of how you see it changing things going into 2021.
Yeah, I think if I could describe it in four words, it's demand up, supply down.
Okay.
Right. So there's a lot of use cases in IoT where there is increasing demand, offshoring of manufacturing, increasing automation in manufacturing, building automation. There's a whole load of extra demand, pent up demand. There are exceptions. I mean, demand for connected cars has plummeted. Connected public transport also gone down. You know, there's not a lot of public transport providers that are replacing their buses anytime soon because there's a shortfall in revenue and so on. So there are some exceptions, but generally there's a whole load of potential upside. But the challenge has been getting out there and deploying. You know, one of the things we've seen is a big drop off in smart meter rollouts because getting access to people's homes to install smart meters, it's just challenging in this environment. Everybody we speak to on the supply side is pretty bullish. It seems like the pipeline is strong.
Okay.
The challenge is always one of the logistics of actually getting to the client and delivering the product that's required. So there's pluses and minuses. I mean, certainly the IoT space is in a much healthier position than pretty much any other technology area you could choose to mention. You know, you wouldn't want to be in retail at the moment or aviation,
right,
or even automotive. There's some pretty challenging times in all of those spaces. Whereas I think we're in a pretty good space at the moment, just because of it's, you know, so helpful in addressing a lot of the challenges that COVID throws up.
Yeah, I totally agree. So to removing COVID from it, the last question I have before we wrap up is just, what are your general predictions and thoughts going into next year? Like, what do you expect to see? What are you hoping to see happen next year to really contribute to the overall growth of the industry?
I think we're expecting a rebound. I think the that downturn we saw, which was supply driven, will actually be overcome. It's a matter of timing, I think, more than anything else. People getting to grips with how they address the market in this new normal. And I think they're more or less getting to it. On a personal standpoint, the big frustration is not being able to go to in-person events, frankly. Okay. I'd be hopeful that some of those would start up. But then we get the opportunity to do things like this, the podcasting and the webinars and so forth. So there's some positives to take out of it. But yeah, I think from the standpoint of the overall IoT, I feel pretty bullish about what 2021's got in store. Keeping fingers crossed that some kind of control can be got over COVID-19.
I totally agree with you. I'm very bullish. I think it's going to be a very exciting year. I think that the industry made it through the bulk of the wave of COVID pretty well. And I think that the overall idea of what IoT brings to organizations should help companies not just out of a pandemic, but also be able to remain sustainable through a pandemic if it were to ever happen again. So I think the technology is something that a lot of companies are going to be looking into and hopefully spending their time on, adopting it in some fashion or other. But again, I really appreciate your time. I think your insights have been super valuable. I don't get the chance to speak to many individuals in your position. And I think it's one of the most valuable conversations we could possibly have because you're looking at this from so many different angles that are incredibly valuable. I'd love to find some time next year to regroup and talk again with you to see how these predictions came about and, you know, hopefully they came true. And I know you're a big content guy yourself. So I wanted to ask you just to give a little bit more information to not only me, but also our audience on two items. One is the book I know you wrote, The Internet of Things Myth, and then also your podcast, because I think that both of those, from what I've seen, seem very fantastic pieces of content that our audience would get a lot of value of. And I'd love for you to just kind of just quickly plug those just so our audience knows where they can get more information.
Yeah, absolutely. The Internet of Things Myth was published back in April, if I remember rightly, a book I wrote with a guy called William Webb, who was the CTO of Neural, which was the technology that Huawei bought and turned into narrowband IoT. So he knows a thing or two about IoT as well. And the starting point of that book was, okay, back in 2010, some people, not me, were predicting 50 billion connected devices by 2020, and we hadn't got there. So why hadn't we got there? And we go through technical issues and commercial issues, many of which I've talked about on the podcast here today. And that's available on Amazon, paperback, or this Kindle version. The podcast, yeah, Wireless Noodle. And the website is wirelessnoodle.com. I take a look at the news that's happening out there. I delve into some of the new technologies. I look at some of the research that we've published from Transform Insights. And it's just me. Maybe I'll expand it to have some interviews in future, but it's just me sort of talking, thinking about what's going on in the space. So that's wirelessnoodle.com. One other one that I'd plug, 2nd of November, if we're going out before the 2nd of November, Transform Insights has a webinar on forecasting the IoT opportunity. If you want to check out the transforminsights.com website, that's got details on it.
Perfect. All right, Matt, I really appreciate your time again. Thanks so much for sharing a lot of that information. It was great. I'll let you know when this gets out to our audience, and we'll do everything we can to kind of promote not just the content you guys produce, but also any of the webinars or anything you have going on. I think our audience will find a lot of value in it, just like I did in this conversation. Mm-hmm. So thanks again.
Awesome. My pleasure.
All right, everyone. Thanks again for listening to that episode of the IoT for All podcast with our special guest, Matt Hatton. Hope you found a lot of value in it. If you did, we truly appreciate it if you leave a rating or review on whichever platform you're listening to us on. Also, feel free to subscribe to our podcast directly or our newsletter or social media to ensure you get the latest episodes as soon as they become available. But other than that, thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next time.